listening to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, joined across the time stream. I guess more of a Doctor Who thing. Joined across the temporal war, something or other, fill in Star Trek reference here, Mr. Jason Snell.
Hello. Just sending you some chronoton particles with love, Scott. Hello.
Oh, there you go. Watch out for time spiders. Time,
watch out for time bugs.
And that's right, we're here to talk about Star Trek Discovery, the latest episode as we record this, which is the day that it was released. Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 4, Face the Strange.
Turn and face the strange. Oh, yeah. It's a I believe it's a reference to Changes by David Bowie. I believe.
I think that's right.
That is what it is, because this is a whole episode about how time may change me, but I can't trace time, and how time may change your crew from season one to season five.
Oh, dear. Yes, indeed. It is one of these time episodes.
It's one of those times.
And now is the time when we say whether we like the episode or not.
Oh,
even
it is.
Before we discuss it.
It is.
So, Jason, yay or nay, like or dislike? Thumbs up, thumbs down, phasers on stun.
I don't even know what that, instead of kill.
I guess.
Stun or kill. What do you think? I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought, you know, I have quibbles. We'll talk about it. But like in general, ooh, I thought it was entertaining and funny at various points, which was a relief, and tried to make some points. You know, I know they say that they didn't know this was the last season, but this feels very much like an appropriate episode for the last season. To go back to the beginning and chart Burnham's progress, that part I thought was really good.
I agree. I always like a time travel episode, and I thought it was clever having the temporal war kind of reference and a time bug,
right,
which seems like a horrible weapon, but is totally believable that someone would make. Seeing the people that we haven't seen. Yeah.
Well, it's very much, it reminds me of the, you know, they were in the time loop in Cause and Effect in TNG for days or whatever it was. They sync up to the beacons. And so what here it is it's weaponized. The idea that by planting a time bug on you, you're basically out of action for some period of time because you're ricocheting through time instead of being able to be back in linear time. And I think that's a clever little twist.
I do as well. And I thought it was neatly constructed in that Stamets somehow, well, Stamets is a genius, so he figures it out fairly quickly, and he lives outside of time because it's tardigrade DNA,
yes,
which there are many funny moments in this episode, and one of them is when Michael Burnham tells that to Rayner, and he just has this look on his face, and you see the guy, never mind, but
yeah,
he's outside time, it's fine. Yeah. I always like it when Star Trek highlights how ridiculous Star Trek is.
There's the moment in this episode where, like, how are we going to explain this to people? Well, this crew, you pretty much say time bug and they'll get it.
And there's that great moment when so Stamets is trying to, you know, he doesn't want to break the temporal prime directive, so he's trying to talk to Reno about, you know, testing his theory, and she's like, are you stuck in a time loop?
Yeah, well, and his response is like, what? No, what? He's like, I'm just kidding with you. And he's like, yeah, no, that was really good. And I also enjoy he at one point, he's like, spore breach, everyone out. You'll get mushrooms in your lungs, spore breach. And then in the next time that he's in the empty engineering, he says, I'm actually a little disappointed that they don't know that spore breach is not a thing.
That was funny. So, and I enjoyed, they build on that joke because the next time he does it, he just is grumpy and everyone leaves.
Yeah,
and because
it's a
like,
season one Stamets. So he's like, I am very grumpy, get out.
I was like, we're leaving. Anyway.
I was more surly before the tardigrade DNA. I thought that was great. Again, funny bits. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Good use of Stamets.
Discovery is not known as a funny Star Trek show.
No.
It has its moments, but not frequently. We talk about this a lot. They talk about their feelings. It's a serious Star Trek show that's all about interpersonal relationships. And I think that, you know, as we said countless times on this podcast, this episode does once again focus on people's feelings and how, you know, you change throughout your life and how change is difficult and you need to adapt and all of that stuff and how it makes you feel. But they did it in a little bit of a lighter, well, at least there are lighter moments. I don't know if I would say the whole episode is light, because it is kind of a horrifying idea to be trapped in a time cycle of your own life. But
sure,
it's no good. But yeah. Why don't we talk about what happens in the episode?
Okay.
Even though we just did, we talked about some of the highlights. But overall, so it starts with, what's his name, Locke and Maul, who are only in this episode very briefly at the beginning, but we get a little more information about them. So they kill this guy that they're buying a time bug from. And I did think that was clever, because they show us the bug melting into Adira's jacket at the end of the last episode.
Right.
I think, well, it's probably like a listening device or a
tracker.
A tracker. But it's worse than that.
What's worse?
And so they buy the thing. They give the guy some latinum in a bag. It should be stacked. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
And it turns out that I think last week we talked about how they don't really kill people. Well, they totally kill this guy, but
yeah.
He deserves it, it seems, because he sells... They kill him with the poison that he sold the Emerald Chain, that the Emerald Chain used to kill people like Locke. Locke is...
Or like Maul, yeah.
Or Maul. I don't remember which one is which.
Yeah, but. I think it was her. But that, so you're getting the sense now that she's been, you know, subjugated by the Emerald Chain and this, and you know, has had a hard life, and this is a bad guy. So they don't feel too bad about killing them. But Locke says... that he's nervous, right? He feels like the walls are closing in, whereas Maul is super excited and positive, I would say, to maybe a little unrealistic degree, where she's like, oh, well, we'll get the stuff, and then that'll be it. No more running, no more bounty on our heads. And I think, have you seen any movie of anything? That's not how it happens. And then they stole the big thing, the end.
Everybody was happy. Yeah, and
yep.
And we
no
see
running.
A glimpse of the future where they sell it to the Breen.
Mm.
And I can't imagine that has worked out well for Locke and Maul.
Hard to believe, yeah.
I believe they probably their story does not end well in that timeline, but we're not in that timeline. So, because that timeline also includes the Federation being destroyed, that seems unlikely. Kind of a downer for the last season of Discovery, the final episode is, well, we failed and everything is awful.
Yeah,
seems unlikely. But anyway, so that's really the only scene that they're in where they grab the, and that was what, 6 months ago or something like that, or sometime before, I don't remember what it was. It couldn't have been 6 months. They get the bug that they've already planted, and they want to be free, man. They want to be free. And now the bug is on the Discovery,
yeah,
making its way very quickly hither and yon.
Yeah, because what the show starts with is 15 hours ago, which is very confusing, because it's like, when? From when is it 15 hours ago? And then they say today. Like, okay, I guess. The point is that scene is out of sequence from we saw them already planting it on Adira. Yes. So we have to explain, I guess, to the no, this happened before that.
This happened not 6 months ago, apparently.
Just 15 hours ago, but it's fine. Whatever. They've got
to confuse those things.
A time bug that's zipping around and Stamets sees it. So that's
he does,
good.
And he thinks it's unusual.
Yeah.
And he watches it melt into the bulkhead.
Mm-hmm.
And we still at this point don't know what it's doing, because it appears as though it's just kind of eavesdropping on people's conversations, but it's not really. I don't really know what it's doing. It's just kind of, I guess maybe it's looking for the primary power conduit itself.
It's homing in so it can implement its time problem to its victims. Yeah, basically.
They figured out the clue from the planet, from Trill.
Yeah.
They go to the coordinates. Nothing's there.
Nothing's there.
And I'm very confused. By the end of the episode, nothing is there still. So I don't really understand what has happened.
But Maul and Locke's, at the end, their warp trace is there. Well, I think they, having seen a clip from next week, I would say, I suspect that their warp trace sort of fades away. So I think the idea is that there's something, there's a wormhole portal spatial something or other that comes every so often and pulls in a ship, and so they had already gone through, and so now the crew of Discovery has to follow wherever they went, I think. But you're right, it is sort of laid out there. I think that's just an example of this story is interconnected, so they're just going to leave it there with that little tidbit and end the episode here rather than having it kind of like roll right into the next one, trying to keep it a little more self-contained.
Slightly confused because I was like, I don't know what's going on here. But I did like the episode anyway, so it didn't really matter. But
it's okay.
But we should get to the meat of it, which is they apparently can't walk to the ready room.
Well, Burnham and Rayner are kind of having it out. You can't. Well, Scott, you can't walk upstairs. You can't walk to the ready room.
Well, that's true. You can't. And then later on, it made me think that is the ready room not next to the bridge because they take the turbo lift to the bridge? I was very confused. But anyway, that doesn't matter.
I don't know. I don't know how it goes. So anyway, my note is, why is Rayner so bad at this? And, you know, this is that thing where they want to show him like learning important lessons about how to get along on Discovery. And this is an aspect of the season that I really am not buying because the way he's portrayed is so incompetent at dealing with other human beings or other beings, non-human and otherwise, that I kind of can't believe that he succeeded in Starfleet at all. I think it's a little too much. But anyway, and then there's the moment where he's so super surly to her. And I ask myself, why is this guy even here? I mean, if all he's going to do is dispute the premise of the ship, then he has no use. And of course, this is set up for him finally in this episode progressing to where he's going to be a capable officer at the end of it. But I think it's a little bit much. But yes, that's what's going on.
I think they may amp it up a little more than I would like them to, but I buy it only because of two things, right? Rayner is from, as I wrote in my notes, a very different time, right?
Yes.
Which is not too far in the past. So he's dealing with the burn.
Every time he hears Burnham's name, he's like, burn.
Exactly. So I can buy that he had less time to talk about his feelings and more time to tell people to shut up and do their job.
Right. Also, his favorite food is ham. So he also goes, burn, ooh, ham.
It's an emotional roller coaster for him.
With him, he's all over the place. Yes, but it's set up. Yeah. And like, I think the result is nice, but I think he's a little too far down that path. But it's fine. Well, it's fine. And then
they amp it up to get the nice resolution at the end of this. But the other thing is that he is dealing with the fact that he's no longer a captain as well. So that's what I understand. That's a big step. Like, he doesn't want to – he has devoted himself to Starfleet and in its darkest hour. And his reward – and he did something that he thought was right. And now he's no longer a captain. So and now he's a first officer on a weird ship that's from the future with these high and mighty people who seem to have solved all the problems that he spent all of his career trying to deal with. It's a difficult situation to be in, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right, Scott. All right. I'll allow it.
He's grumpy. I like that. But he is, you would think as a captain, he would be a little bit better with people.
A little more competent, regardless of being from another time.
So they're yelling at each other. Mostly Rayner is yelling at Burnham. And Burnham is like, dude, you need to get with the program. This is my ship. And I'm the captain. Remember, you're not. FYI. And then the lights start to flash and they need to get to the bridge. So they use their little personal transporters. It seems not to work. It seems to not to work in a spectacular way because it's the Red Angel out the window.
Yeah, interesting. We're in a wormhole. What's going on?
Rainer's like, what the heck is that red thing? And Burnham's like, funny story. that's me.
It's me. Yeah, and we're about to crash land. But it doesn't matter because it turns out they're on a wild ride where they're going to go through the personal history of the USS Discovery.
I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed also Rayner said, so we went back to the point at which you come to the future. That's confusing.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
That is confusing. Mm-hmm. So they hopscotch through. There are just kind of some fun hopscotching through time. They go to the Red Angel where this all started. Then they hop to dry dock and we are greeted with a Federation or a Starfleet construction uniform that seems straight out of one of the original movies.
Guy with a hard hat and some AirPods doing some wrench work on the
I enjoyed that guy.
I thought that guy was fun. Oh, are you here for the inspection? And they're like, yep, get to it. But you said fun jumping around. Some of the things that this episode jumps to are not things that I view with fondness, because our next jump is to Control. The battle with Control, when there were all those guys wearing masks and like black outfits who punched people and were really boring. And we get them again, and there's more punching. I'm like, okay, it's whatever.
Not a lot of punch. I mean, there's a lot of punching, but it isn't a long time.
I don't look back on that. On that detail with fondness, but it is a detail. Throughout this, I had the thought of the problem with this episode is due to some combination of how they're going to script this episode and who is available. It feels a little bit like there are not that many memorable things to jump back to in the 5-year history of Star Trek Discovery. I was like, oh yeah, remember those guys? All right.
Well, and I liked how, oh, it's Lorca's ship, but he's off with Saru, so don't worry.
Yeah, he's gone somewhere else because those actors are not in this episode. I was like, all right, okay, all right, very much.
I kept hoping, not expecting, but hoping like a Michelle Yeoh cameo or something. But
I was hoping for Jason Isaacs even. That would have really goosed this episode quite a bit if they had had to deal with Lorca. But and who knows, maybe they wanted that and they couldn't get him or something, but that would have been fun. But that's not what they're trying. They're not what they're trying to do there. This is where she lets him know that Rayner know that that Stamets. We need to be, from that great first season episode with Harry Mudd. We need to find him because he lives outside of time thanks to his tardigrade DNA, which is like just go with it. It's Star Trek. Okay,
what?
Yeah,
all right, fine.
He does.
He
was gravely wounded in that episode. So they cut to him in sick bay, and he was like, "Oh, Paul, I'll take care of you." And he's like, "No, I forgot how much this hurts. No, so
we need
good.
To put you in a coma. Do not put me in a coma."
so funny. That was really good, right? That part made me laugh. That was pretty great.
Yes.
I take it back. The battle with Control wasn't the boring one. It's Osira's faceless thugs from the Emerald Chain.
Yes.
Those are the ones that I found boring. Although I'm now going to point out one of, I think, is the more subtly hilarious things in this episode, which is they decide that there's like corridor on deck 13 or whatever that nobody goes to. And I think this is hilarious because first off, you're like, well, wait a second. How can there be a corridor on a starship where nobody goes to? But it's like, but these people, like Michael's been on this starship a long time. And I find it hilarious. That like, if you work here, you know, there's no reason to go there because of what's on it and where people are in the various traffic patterns. It's like, everybody knows that that place is like that's where the carpet doesn't need to be cleaned, and it's like it's just real. If you need to have a private conversation with somebody, that's where you go. And so they keep going back there, and there's nobody there. Which I know it's convenient for the script, but it's really funny. I think that is also really funny. It's like where, but they go there in the turbo lift, and the thugs are there, and they're like, "Go, stupid Osira thugs!" On they don't they know that they're
they don't
know supposed to be here.
Nobody's here. What are you doing here? And then they beat up a bunch of thugs.
And then Reno saves the day.
Yes.
And they're worried about the time stream. So, you know, Michael hides, but Reno has a conversation with Rayner and says, buy me a drink later, which also made me laugh out loud because, you know, it'll be much later.
It'll be. And Burn was like, how did everything go with Reno? And he said, don't worry. I told her I was a temp.
Yeah. I thought, I thought he would say, don't worry, I told her I'd buy her a drink later. But no, it's just, I told her I was a temp, and it's fine. She's like, whatever. He's wearing a uniform. It's probably fine.
It's vaguely familiar.
It's a 31st century uniform. Seems okay. Seems legit.
It all checks out. And then they go from bad to worse because they jump. I think this is the point at which they jump far into, well, not far into the future.
Yes.
Jason, I thought they jumped very far into the future because there is that short trek where, spoilers for short treks, where Discovery is like in a cloud nebula for 1,000 years or whatever.
Well, this is referencing that. For sure.
Yes.
But it's only from the current, because they jumped 900 years, it's actually only like 150 years in the future.
You're right, Jason.
From the current Star Trek Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
But and so it's, you know, Zora, who was first introduced in that episode, and she's listening to show tunes on the bridge and there's nobody there. And so you're thinking, oh, this is going to be from the short trek. But no, she's like, oh, all of you died and I don't want to show you what's on the view screen. They're like, you got to show us. And she's like, oh, everything blew up and the whole Federation is gone because the Breen found the Breen had the progenitor stuff and they destroyed everything. No. You know, but it's like, I love that they're referencing that short trek about how the Discovery ends up really parked in a cloud.
Good. If you're listening to this, and I find it hard to believe, but if you're listening, well, I find that easy to believe because this is the world's best podcast.
Yes.
But if you're listening to this and you haven't watched that short trek, which I find hard to believe,
yes,
you should pause right now and go watch that short trek and then come back because it's really good. And it's like 10 minutes long.
And influential to the whole 30th century setup of Discovery for the last 2 years, because it's set in that far future. And like Book, the character in that short trek is not Book, but he is from the same kind of culture. He refers to the Federation as the Vidresh, which is something that they used in last season or season before in Discovery. So it's called Calypso. But yeah, you should check it out if you haven't. It's very good.
And I think that scene is quite, or that little segment is quite impactful, because I really like when she says, Zora, show us what's behind the view screen. And Zora's response is, you die. You all die.
Yeah.
Which is kind of chilling. And then Michael's like, I really need you to turn on the view screen.
We're looking for information here. You know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, it's the Federation headquarters in ruins and their Breen ships.
Oh, no.
It's just Federation. It's not great.
I did chuckle at the very beginning. Their first hop, Burnham says, oh, we need to be really careful with the Temple Prime Directive. And then the next hop, it's just like, let's just punch and kill a bunch of people. It's fine.
Once they realize that I think there's a moment where they realize that the rules of this are that it keeps resetting every time they jump. And so
I just chuckled.
They wave it away. But yeah, there is a moment where they're like, okay, well, I guess we're doing this. Nobody cares about those thugs. I was actually thinking, like, you know, all the lots of thugs got beat up. Those guys got beat up, and they're like, they lose track of who beat them up, but it doesn't matter because they got beat up. It's fine. They would have gotten beat up by somebody else. They're trapped on Deck 13. They were never getting out of there anyway.
That's true. Maybe they never existed because Deck 13 is this quasi interdimensional space.
A theme emerges in the episode at this point, because Michael talks about the mutiny and coming on board and being afraid, and Raynor has a great line where he's like, you gotta be the first person to captain a starship you first boarded as a prisoner. That's gotta be, there's some Guinness Book of World Records going on there. There's something going on there. And
check the database, but I think you're right.
And how did that happen? And she says, never give up. And I said, also be Sarek's nepo baby. But yeah, okay, never give up.
Help,
sure,
you know,
sure.
She
also
earned
that.
It.
She did. She totally did. I mean, she was her whole family had been dead for 1,000 years by the time she got the promotion. So
it's true. She earned that. Yeah. I will have no aspersions cast to Michael Burnham.
Yeah.
But it is a good scene, because she is at that point thinking, well, this is a hopeless situation. And Raynor takes up, and this is where we see a glimpse of Raynor, Captain Raynor,
yes,
who can deal with people properly and inspire them. And I think this is a turning point in this episode, this conversation for Raynor as a character, where he realizes, oh, right, I need to be a productive member of this crew and help work this problem and stop being a jerk.
Yeah, get out of my crying self-pity party that I'm throwing for myself.
I'm lashing out at people. You can't do that.
And Zora ends up like giving them like a little holo map of like, here's how this thing works and this will help you. Good luck and set things right, Captain. And then off they go, because now they've got their little hologram algorithm thingy that tells them where they're going and why. So they've got a little map to their
and
their
how long they'll be there, which is the important thing.
Yes, because they need enough time in order to do whatever they figure out to do. So
and then they hop to one, they get Stamets, and Stamets is a genius again.
Yeah,
so
this is this is where Reno says, are you stuck in a time loop right now? And he's like, what? No. What?
No. No.
And a great line, just a great throwaway line from Jet Reno is, if you bury yourself in the abstract, you'll turn into a Rothko painting. And that was, I just saw a Rothko painting the other week at MoMA. Mm-hmm. So That made me laugh. He's just a little too abstract. He's just going to become some lines.
Yeah, it's not good. But he is not abstract. He is building a little device to be used to capture. It's kind of like it's you know when you there's a spider in your house and you don't want to kill it.
You get a box. You know,
spiders are good
with
for
a piece
the
of paper.
Ecosystem.
And you're like,
exactly.
I have a system.
You slide it under there, and then I'll take it.
It's
outside.
Like that, but for time bugs.
Exactly.
It's a time box and a time paper, but it's very similar. Right. Or like a fly swatter, but for a time bug, it's a much more complicated swatter. This is,
and
by the way, the one of my favorite things in this episode. I don't know if you picked up on it. There's a funny line in Ghostbusters where they say, "Don't cross the streams." And he's like, "Don't cross the streams." Bill Murray says, "Egon, what happens if we cross the streams?" He says, "Imagine every particle in your body stopping and then exploding simultaneously at the speed of light." And Bill Murray's response is, "Okay, that's bad." Right? And in here, literally the same thing happens. It is very clearly a Ghostbusters reference where Stamets goes in great detail about, imagine yourself, every part of you being pulled in infinite directions over and over again for eternity. And the response is, "Sounds bad." Yeah, I love it.
This is when I will admit that I don't think I've ever seen Ghostbusters.
Gasp! You should see it. It's a funny movie. But anyway, that is it's exactly that joke, which is okay. That's bad, right? Like, I don't need the detail. Here's the technical details of what will happen to us if this happens. Okay, bad.
Don't
got it.
That.
Bad. A bad thing will happen if we do that. Let's not do that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be bad. So we got to stop this time bug.
Luckily, they have their time box and their time paper, and we think, okay, episode over, even though I think it's halfway through. And it turns out this bug has some defenses in that it has a temporal shield that if you try and touch, go through it, it has accelerated, like a shield of hyper-accelerated time around it.
Right.
And things disintegrate, which I thought was really cool.
I thought that was very cool. This is the same scene where Stamets expresses sadness that the crew falls for the spore breach thing every time. And also, in a emotionally touching moment, Burnham has to go steal some holodeck fluid, from her quarters, because there's a holodeck there. And Grudge is there. And then, of course, shirtless past Book is there.
Oh, dear.
And there are many feelings. And it ends up with she says to him, "Can we talk about this later?" Which, again, I have a laugh about, because she means much later. And then, but they kiss.
Talk to her therapist.
He says, "I love you," and she's like, Federation therapists have it hard too. "Well, I went back in time from when I wasn't broken up with my boyfriend, and he was there, not wearing a shirt as you do in the past, and
it was a different time.
And then we kissed and said, 'I love you,' but it wasn't him now. It was him then, but it's me now. What does it all mean, doctor?" And the doctor says, "I'm not actually here. I'm a time bug."
Oh, no. It's happening again.
Yep. That's how they get you.
That is how they get you. And now so it doesn't work because of the time thing, and they need to figure the time shield.
Yeah.
And they need to figure it out. And that's another thing I like about this episode, Jason, and I think we talked about this in the last episode. Like, part of the joy of watching Star Trek is watching them work the problem.
Solve the problem.
They have. Yeah. And this is the entire show is them bonding through working this problem together and trying to solve it.
And the solution is nonsense technobabble because it's Star Trek. But the point is that they're trying to use their brains and work out a solution to the problem. And they do. They're like, "We could go to warp and break the warp bubble." And the warp, and it's explaining how Star Trek works, right? It's like, well, the warp bubble is what protects us from actual physics, time dilation. And so if we break it, then we're going to be going so fast outside the time bubble that you can't go. I mean, what it's trying to imply here is, like, you know, you can't go faster than the speed of light. And the warp doesn't, you know, is a way around that. But, like, there's a limit so that the acceleration of time can't happen in the time bug shield because it's already going at full speed, essentially, is what is happening there. And it's just enough for me to be like, "Sounds good." Right? Like,
yeah,
I'm not going to check their math, their made up math, which is, sounds good. Sounds like plausible Star Trek logic. Yeah.
they're dealing with a time bug that is making them be trapped in a time loop.
I'm just saying, this was enough for me to be like, yeah, that's cool. I like that. Sounds very appropriate to Star Trek that this would be the solution.
Yes, it sounds like a very Star Trek-y thing.
Yeah,
and speaking of Star Trek-y thing, Burnham, we go to, I think this is the first or second season, it must be second season, where...
That's first season.
Oh, because it's Control. Is it first season?
This is the first season because it's Lorca's ship they're on right here.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
He's not there. They're on an away mission. And so she runs into herself like early first season where she's fresh, where mm-hmm. Tilly is still concerned she's going to be murdered in her sleep.
And that's another thing I like about this episode. And we talked about... when we were talking about our the less successful episode before this, mm-hmm. In that there came a point, I'm sure, when the writers said we either have to be different or just turn into, you know, kind of turn into what makes Discovery Discovery. And the real solution in this episode is not the technobabble, but rather the connections that the crew has, and they can even trust people. And Burnham knows about all of them, and she can, you know, tell Tilly that she's afraid that she's going to get murdered in her sleep because of her snoring and all these other things. And Rayner knows about the love of ships and the Constitution class, and knows about Burnham and listened to that voice in your head so he can talk early first season Burnham down from trying to stop them from seemingly sabotaging the ship. And so that I found to be quite satisfying, that that seems like the most Discovery of all solutions here.
Yeah.
It's just I know about you, so you should trust me.
Well, and it's the whole message of Burnham at that point is feeling despair. Mm-hmm. A mutineer isn't going to end up as a captain. It's all a lie, and she's like, but it can happen. We get the detailed, lengthy fight between Burnhams, which I was very impressed by. Technically, I find those kinds of fights kind of boring after a while, but the fact it was very impressive that it looked very much like, I mean, there are those shots where it's the back of the stunt person and all that, but there were also a bunch of shots where it looks very much like Burnham is fighting herself. I thought that was pretty cool. Neck pinch ends it. I was like, you got to give her a neck pinch. That's what's got to happen here. And that totally happens. And then, after Rayner and Stamets talk about their feelings during an important countdown where they have limited amounts of time because it's Star Trek Discovery and they know what they're doing, people, then Rayner's like, I know I can be a positive force and encourage people. So he says, what can I do to help, to Stamets, gives him a little pep talk, and which is good because then when angry first season Burnham comes later with her phaser and all of that, he has to talk her down.
Talk her down. Yep.
And then on the bridge, Burnham has to do the same thing of like, I need you all to listen. I know all about all of you. And the thing that convinces them is Arium, who died, the robot lady, is on the bridge. And she says, you die. And everybody else is like, no, it's a lie. We would never let that happen. And Arium and it's like, no, you sacrifice yourself for the rest of them. No, we wouldn't let her. And Arium's like, I would. And you're telling the truth, and it's another good, again, little touchy feely moment. That's Discovery right there. So yeah,
it is, and I liked it. Yeah. I say sign me up. It was good, and I also enjoy when Arium's like, so their ship scan for Michael Burnham life signs. And
oh
the
yeah,
ship says, oh, there are two Michael Burnhams and one's unconscious, and Michael's like, no, I can explain.
Yeah, that's right. I had to give her a neck pinch. She's fine. She's fine.
She's fine. I didn't kill myself. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then so ultimately, yeah, that I love that moment that Rayner has to give the pep talk to Burnham about like, believe in yourself.
Listen to that voice in your head and listen to what it's telling you, because I know what it's telling you right now. And that great thing that is a cliche of you walking towards the person that's going to shoot you, and you know they're not going to shoot you.
Oh, but that's so good.
But it's good.
All the way
it
up.
Works.
It's like, here it is. Phaser's right in my chest. You blow me away right now. I believe in you. And I did think, well, if this time loop resets, then he could blow him away.
It's like he's pretty much, unkillable at this moment.
Yeah.
So it's fine. But
yeah, probably so. I mean, you never know, but still, you probably are okay.
He's probably fine. But yes, so he convinces her, and she's like, okay, fine. And
they squish the bug.
They squish the bug with the thing, and Rainer gets a super old hand.
Yes.
But Dr. Culber can fix it, yeah, so it's fine.
It's fine. He's just holding it, and he's probably got a little arthritis in there, but he waves later of like, ah, yeah, I got it fixed. Yeah.
I like that little thing when he walks out and he waves. And then Michael Burnham has a little like kumbaya moment where she's explaining everyone to the bridge what has happened. And they find the warp signature. And she says, this is a mystery. Let's work together to solve the mystery because that's what we do.
That's what we do.
The end.
And then Scott goes, wait a second. I don't understand where they went and what happened next. Like,
I don't understand what is going on.
But that's okay. It was a good episode.
Yes.
We'll deal with the rest of it next week.
They'll explain it like at the first minute of the next episode. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. When they say 13 hours ago or whatever, they said they were 6 hours and here's 5 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So Face the Strange. Yeah. Again, using science fiction concepts to talk mm-hmm. about change and how people change and how. Burnham especially has taken this very unlikely journey from where she was in episode 3, where she's a mutineer hauled on board the Discovery, as it turns out, as part of Lorca's evil plan, to being the captain of the ship, and how unlikely that is, and how, you know, and then Rainer is adapting, and like that's the theme of this episode, and I would say also Stamets has things to do, has a purpose. And mm-hmm. I liked that too, because sometimes the show struggles with like what the heck to do with Stamets, and here he mm-hmm. was great.
And I wanted to make a point of saying I think Anthony Rapp does a great job. They don't do mm-hmm. Stamets is a super important character that doesn't get to do a lot, which just seems like doesn't make a lot of sense, but it is true. But he does a lot of good things in this episode, and it's always fun. To see, I mean, the other thing this episode highlights, of course, in part of that theme that you're talking about, Jason, is how much these characters, you know, Stamets and Burnham have changed themselves. And so going back to putting them back in mm-hmm. first season where they are very different is a lot of fun and reminds the audience that, oh, yeah, remember these people.
Yeah.
They've been through a lot.
They've been through a lot.
And they have changed and they are the better for it. Uh-huh. Especially in Stamets' case, because he was really unpleasant.
Yeah, like you said, I'm very grumpy and need to be left alone. Much, much better. He was under Lorca's thumb, and you know,
it wasn't great for anybody.
War stuff, and it was not. Yeah, he was.
And now he's dealing with, and they touch on this again, where he feels like he has done, like he has had the highest moment in his career. And now it's nothing but downward.
Right.
But now this progenitor thing is like, well, maybe I can do some important work. But I do think it is very interesting that they show an even more complicated part of that, which is he doesn't know if he will be able to do it or if it's worth it. Like this stuff is completely different. So he's not even sure. So I think that's an interesting mm-hmm. Facet of Stamets' character as well. Is like he is desperate to make not be a one hit wonder, but he doesn't know if he has it in him to deal with this.
Well, so one, you know, ensemble shows are great, but the fact is, I think episodes are much better when there really are a few characters at the fore. Mm-hmm. And so here we have, this is a three character episode. I know there are lots of people in it, the old versions of the, or, you know, younger versions of the bridge crew and Reno gets to have some jokes and all that. But basically this is Burnham, Stamets and Rainer. And that helps a lot because those characters get to shine and get to do interesting things. And, you know, there's just some more momentum to it than you would get if you had like an A plot with four characters in it and a B plot with three characters in it. And right, like where it's harder to build up that momentum and give them times to shine like they do in this episode.
Yes. And even though they break up the action into, you know, different sections, there's no A or B plot. It's all A plot, right?
So it really is.
Just need to get back to where they were.
I like it.
That helps as well.
It does. It does. I would like to briefly enter the conspiracy corner, if you don't mind.
All right.
To talk about what we're doing next week. I know I mentioned a little bit, but I want to go into a little more detail. But if you don't want to have any suggestion of things that have already been seen in trailers, but you might not want to know or all that, you can please come back next week on the Vulcan Hello.
Same. Yes, we'll be here welcoming.
Yes.
Welcoming you.
Welcoming. All right. Now, in the corner, just to say, yes, next week is Mirrors, and the preview in the Ready Room shows them going through to, it sounds like, you know, the implication here is that Mal and Locke went through some sort of dimensional something or othery that is there at that point in space and ended up somewhere. And the clip is that Burnham and Book are in, I think, Book's ship, and they're buffeted by all sorts of, like, you know, energies and turbulence and all of that. And then there's some debris, and then they see like half of Malinlak's ship, like they were wrecked, and it's this kind of green fog mist kind of place that they are. It's a weird, like, maybe interdimensional kind of location. And they're like, oh, do you think they're alive? And then Book points at the screen and says, well, maybe they are if they went there. And that's the end of the scene. Except that in the trailer, we know that there's green fog in a Constitution-class ship that says NCC-1701 on it, and that there was another trailer from last year that showed a phaser fight between Mal and Locke and our crew on the Strange New Worlds sickbay set. So put it all together. Oh, a sickbay set with ISS Enterprise logos. And the episode's called Mirrors, everybody. It's called Mirrors. So he's trapped in a mirror world? What? Wait, what? Huh? Anyway,
there's
so
no such thing, Jason.
They're the making some flop deep cut Flophouse references now. So anyway, I expect that we will be seeing the sets of Strange New Worlds next week, that it will probably be the ISS Enterprise. So it's been pulled there from the Mirror Universe at some point. And my question is, what will the other Easter eggs / references be if they have that? Are we going to see sort of Beardy Spock from Mirror Mirror?
Oh, we are going to see a picture, if not an actual Beardy Spock.
Right. Or will it be like angry Captain Kirk? Evil, angry Captain Kirk or something? Or will it just be a ghost ship that's abandoned? Or will there be like Mirror Pike or something? Like, it's unclear. And maybe there won't be any actors, and it'll just be sort of they get to use the Strange New World set, and that's fun and save some money. I don't know. But I am excited to find out.
I am just hoping that we see goateed Spock in some form.
Oh, that would be so nice if we get to see Beardy Evil. Not evil, really. I mean, turns out that's... For spoilers for Mirror Mirror, he's not actually evil.
Wait a second. No, he's not. But that's his downfall. That's the
it is, according to Deep Space Nine.
The delicious irony of the Mirror Mirror universe.
Yeah, is that he brings peace and then they're conquered.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
Trust no one. Mm-hmm. See, that's Discovery says, you know, work on your feelings and trust people. But Deep Space Nine says, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not.